From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Labor Day weekend 2022. Well, the Brewers are on a Western road trip, so you're free to check out a million other events that are happening around town. Here's just a small sample. Thousands of Harleys are here for the hometown rally. The Walworth County Fair is happening. There's a water ski show on Pewaukee Lake and Oktoberfest at the Bavarian Inn. And lest we forget, the Packers open their season next Sunday with the Vikings in Minnesota. Okay, let's start in Florida. Researchers are implanting radio transmitters into Burmese pythons in order to track them through the state. They got one of the transmitters back when a python was swallowed whole by a pit viper. Welcome to Florida. The researchers were able to track and capture the bigger snake and release it back into the wild because Florida apparently doesn't have enough snakes. The top two officials of Hungary's Meteorological Service were fired on Monday after an incorrect rainy forecast. I've got just two words for Hungary: Farmer's Almanac. We have a new Impossible Burger. A Swedish plant-based food company has developed a human meat burger. For now, I'm off Swedish meatballs. How about a couple of stories from the Big Apple? It's now illegal in New York for anyone under 21 to buy whipped cream canisters to get high. It's called huffing. And inflation and rising crime have caused at least one New York store to keep Spam in a locked case. You know, with the razor blades and stuff. Now, if you top off your Spam with whipped cream, well, that's a felony. And the next story sounds like it should be from Florida. A man in Philadelphia has an emotional support 4-foot-long alligator. Again, that's a 4-foot-long emotional support alligator. Do you think when he travels on an airplane, TSA tells him to put it in the overhead? On the podcast today, we have Kendall Bauer, Paige Ratke, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, Max, I've heard of alligator shoes and alligator luggage. Not sure we bring it live onto the plane normally, but I appreciate the updates.
Not on my flight.
You know, as always, bringing us strong into this Labor Day weekend here with some good headlines. Unfortunately, maybe not such good headlines for the markets. The NASDAQ down 4.2% this week, closing at 11,631. The S&P down 3.3%, closing at 39.24. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 3% this week, closing at 31,319. For the year, NASDAQ now down 25.2%, the S&P down 16.8%, and the Dow Jones down 12.6%. On the week, dollar continues to gain strength, 12.8% stronger this year against a broad basket of international currencies. And crude oil down pretty significantly this week, despite maybe some ongoing concerns about inflation. Crude oil down 6.5% this week, still up 15.5% year to date. So just maybe a quick look at some of the relevant factors. Joel, I think as we started this week, and especially as we got to the middle of the week, I was reading report after report from economists that were drop-dead certain that the labor report that was released this morning, that was released Friday morning, was going to have this huge impact on stocks. If it was a really good number, you were going to get a pretty significant sell-off in markets Friday on the fear that the Fed was going to have to continue to move as quickly as they have been. If it was a really bad report, maybe you see something the other direction. We got mostly what we expected, a few hits and misses, a few nuances within the report, but, stocks rallied quite strongly Friday morning. And then I think investors started to look at a long weekend when a lot of different stuff, potentially could shake out, and found it a good opportunity to take some profits. So I think a reminder that even as now we have the data on the labor report and even, kind of knowing that it wasn't all that different than what we expected, the market response to that labor data was maybe a little different than what most would have thought was coming.
Yeah, Kyle, another reminder that the economy is not the stock market and vice versa. So the report actually, at first glance, looked like it was good news, bad news. The good news was that You know, the country added more jobs in August, and it's, you know, 204,000 jobs ahead of where it was before the recession started. And the bad news that the unemployment rate went up, but that ended up sort of being good news because the unemployment rate went up because more people were seeing that people were being hired, and so they got off the sidelines and became job seekers again, thus they were unemployed. And if you add the people who are looking for jobs all together with those who are sitting on the sidelines, if you add it together with the people who are already working, you have what's called the labor force. And you take that divided by the number of people eligible to work, and you get the labor force participation rate. And that's kind of one of the under the headline good news notes from today's report. Labor force participation rate went up for the first time in months, and for the prime age of workers, that's 25 to 54, it's actually close to where it was before the pandemic started. Still below, you know, where, I mean, it's something that's been going down for years, but those two forces show that it's a pretty good sign for the labor force.
You know, I think we continue to have this mismatch between job openings and kind of the actual people looking for work. And, you know, we've talked about for a while now on the podcast how you solve some of those problems. We had a headline from Ron Johnson today talking about potentially putting seniors back to work here in Wisconsin as a way to solve some of that labor mismatch. I'm not sure most of our listeners, most of our retirees are interested in going back into the workforce, but that is one way you potentially solve some of the gap. The other is some technological innovation, right? Some spending on trying to replace the marginal workers with, you know, innovation, with more productivity. And so, you know, I think those are things that are fairly positive for stock market outlook. But you look beyond simply, you know, kind of the jobs numbers and plenty of other economic stuff we're looking at this week.
Right. We had factory orders numbers today, and within that is a number on capital expenditures. And what that found is that capital goods orders minus military and transportation, and that's a sign of business investment, and that's been up pretty consistently throughout the pandemic. So that's a good sign, you know, hitting toward that productivity aspect that you were just mentioning. Also, one of the chief influxes of employment in the last month were in professional and business services. And a lot of those are things like architects and engineers and computer systems people that are necessary for converting businesses and the economy to more high tech.
Yeah, and I think, again, critical to kind of the long-term success of our economy. One of the reasons why the market's been as profitable as it's been, even as the economic growth has been a bit more stagnant the last 10, 20 years, is that corporations continue to find ways to be more profitable, to do more with the workers they have. And, you know, a big, pretty big transition in terms of what we're selling. We're less of a manufacturing economy now, and so there's more money to be made in services. And so I think as we look at some of the long-term implications, it speaks to the opportunity in stocks. It also speaks to what you said earlier, the economy is not the stock market, right? And so even if we expect growth to slow here, there's still plenty of things we can be happy about as we look at, you know, kind of the investment opportunity over the next 5 to 10 years. You know, the other couple of things that stood out to me, we got a report on consumer confidence this week. You know, I think I can't stress enough how important the strength of the consumer has been to, you know, the recovery from COVID. And, you know, we continue to see consumers have pretty strong balance sheets. But the other part of that is how confident do they feel about what the road ahead looks like.
And a lot of the confidence is tied to inflation, and which is a number. We can put a number on that, but it's mostly a feeling. It's mostly how people feel about, you know, the rate of prices going up. And you know, you pointed out on last week's podcast that some of those comparisons year to year are going to make it seem that inflation isn't as high as a number, but whether we feel that, in what we're paying is another thing. We're also, I think, seeing some effects or starting to see effects from the higher interest rates from the Federal Reserve. Just even in the numbers today on the jobs report, it shows that wages are leveling off. They're still high. It was 5.2% year-to-year hourly wage increase. But that was the same that it's been for the last 3 months. And the 3 months before that, it was all declining. So there are more signs out there that inflation is starting to get more under control, but not under control enough probably that the Fed won't stop raising rates.
And Joel, I think that, you know, that's an important part of it too, because that feeds back into the labor force participation. So obviously one of the Fed's big concerns with rising inflation and trying to get a cap on that is, you know, the wage price spiral. And so if we continue to have those mismatches in the labor market, that's going to continue to push wages higher, which then of course can be a self-fulfilling prophecy on the inflation side of the picture. So when we have more people participating as well, it takes some of the concerns off the table, but of course not enough that the Fed is likely to take the foot off the gas at this point.
And I want to be clear that, you know, the data for a while has suggested that the economy is strong but slowing, and that's the Fed's intention. That we have to be crystal clear that if you're going to get inflation under control, the way you do that is to slow economic growth. Now, it's a fine line, and the Fed rarely gets it 100% correct. I think you're misplacing your faith if you think that short term they're going to be able to solve any of these problems precisely and perfectly. But when you look at the longer term record, you just can't fight the Fed. And so if the Fed's intent on cutting inflation, they're going to have their way, whether it's cutting it all the way back to 2%, whether it's letting it run a little bit hotter than that, just because that's what they need to do to support stability in other areas of the economy. You know, those are all reasonable things, but it's going to lead to higher interest rates. And Kendall, one of the things that I know you've spent a lot of time looking at, one of the things we talk about is what some of those opportunities look like for clients that for a long time were getting paid zero or next to zero in safe money. You're getting a lot of questions now. You're having a lot of conversations about, okay, what can we do different, you know, with what should be the safer piece of our portfolio?
Yeah, I think you have a lot of people, particularly savers, kind of being rewarded now in the fact that we're seeing much more attractive yields in money market accounts, in some shorter term, you know, securities like CDs and treasuries. I mean, money markets, it's not uncommon now to see, you know, in some cases paying north of 1.5%, you know, in some cases even 2%. We've seen, you know, short-term one-year CDs sometimes north of 3, treasuries up near 3.25. You know, if you're sitting on a pile of cash or you have an upcoming, you know, expense, there's kind of a bright spot in what, you know, a bright spot to get you through kind of the gloom and doom that you're seeing on all the media outlets is, okay, my money's doing something. You know, it's not keeping pace with inflation necessarily, but, you know, getting 1-3% beats the 0.25% we've seen for about the last decade.
And Kendall, I think your point about if you have cash sitting on the sidelines is an important part of that, because obviously when stock and bond funds are selling off at the same time, you start to get the inclination of, well, where can I put my money to actually make a little bit of something? And, you know, you have to look at the opportunity cost as well. So if you have that extra cash sitting on the side, there's opportunities out there for a higher yield. But then, of course, you want to make sure that you're not, you know, selling stocks or selling things when they're down to generate that cash, because over the next 1 year, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen in the stock market. We don't know what's going to happen in interest rates. And that's really why we have the volatility right now. But, you know, if you have to consider the opportunity of selling out of stocks right now to get into some of those yields, what may you give up also over the next year if we start to see things rebound?
Well, and I think that's critical, Paige, is understanding that all of this has its place. But it isn't necessarily at the expense of something else, right? That's the whole concept of balance that we preach, that we, you know, follow here, is that you need to understand the role that each piece of your portfolio plays. You need to understand that there's a place for the stocks that are there. There's a place for the bond funds that are there. And potentially, you know, Kendall rightfully points out that if you've got money that you've been sitting on that isn't earning you much in a checking account at the bank or even in a savings account at a traditional brick and mortar bank, it's worth having a conversation about what else you could be doing there, because, you know, the difference between, you know, the 0 or 0.25% that we used to see and, you know, 2, 2.5%, even 3% if you can go out a little bit longer and take just a little bit more risk, those are big numbers. And it's worth it to try to overcome some of that lost, some of what is lost to inflation, even if you can't get it all back short term. Long term, if the Fed does win out here, if inflation does come back down, you know, rates stabilize, and all of a sudden you're in an environment in which you're getting a real return again that's, you know, a little more attractive than the zero we used to see. You know, the other thing I'll point out here as we transition into fall, and I don't want to put too much doom and gloom on the weather here because it's a beautiful day out today. We're staring out, you know, 20 floors up over Lake Michigan looking at sun and hot weather. But, you know, one of the things we tend to see into fall is estimates of capital gains. And obviously this year looks a little different for so many mutual funds that for years had been making money hand over fist. Obviously, when they sell positions within their portfolio, they're required to distribute those gains that they make to their shareholders, passing on the tax liability, which creates some headaches, right? It creates a tax bill that maybe we weren't counting on. It creates a tax bill that maybe we're less than happy to receive. Well, in a year in which a lot of stuff has lost money, those tax bills are probably going to be a little bit smaller. The capital gains distributions that we'll get later in the year, probably a little less impactful. It doesn't mean we're not watching. There's still going to be some that come. There's still going to be places where, you know, the funds just couldn't do anything about getting out of a position that had a big gain. And so, Kendall, one of the things we keep an eye on, obviously, is, okay, how do we navigate those distributions and what opportunities are there to try to offset that liability?
Yeah, and it's one of the things I've been talking with clients frequently about is, you know, especially if they have a non-qualified investment account, is whether or not there's opportunity to generate any tax losses. We often refer to that as tax loss harvesting. And, you know, for those that aren't aware or haven't heard about this, it's pretty straightforward. It's, you know, moving from stock A to stock B, you know, sell stock A, buy stock B, or bond A, buy bond B. When you do that, you're realizing a loss that can then offset future capital gains. The nice part is you're not sitting on the sidelines, you know, when you do that. So if the market has a day where it's up or a nice run, you're not going to miss out on that. But that transaction of selling one security, buying another, realizing that loss, it could save you some money on taxes in the long term.
And I'm fond of telling clients that, you know, they're here not just because of the smart investment decisions, right? Not just because of the great funds that we pick. And, you know, we can argue all day about how, you know, what we've picked is great or not great. But all the parts of the conversation around that, right? We're not going to be your tax preparer, but we can be part of the team that helps advise you on how to save you a few nickels in taxes. And if that's one way we can boost your return, especially in a year in which returns have been as poor as they are, and I think it's the right conversation to be having. It's one of just many conversations that, you know, we have with our clients on a regular basis to get an understanding of, okay, what else can I do for you to help you understand that this isn't just, you know, this one thing, that we really are full service here. We really do want to make sure that, you know, your needs are taken care of. You know, it's it seems like every week we get another alert from some institution about some security breach. This one this afternoon, Friday afternoon, particularly tricky. It came from the IRS, a notification that about 120,000 individuals have had some of their information compromised, information including names, mailing addresses, contact information, and even some financial information. It sounds like not Social Security numbers. But convenient of the IRS to make this notification on a Friday afternoon, right before a long holiday weekend. Want to stress that, you know, this is something we've talked about at length. We have articles, videos available on our website talking about these very issues. But Joel, I know you've gone through this process yourself. tips for people that are potentially looking at, you know, okay, maybe my information's been compromised again?
You know, there's just so much you can control in the world and so much that you can't. And one of the things you can control is by looking at your financial statements and keeping tabs on all of those statements that you get. Just if you see something that looks awry, call attention to it. Call, you know, whoever that statement's coming from and say, hey, I don't understand this. Please explain this to me. I think something might be wrong here. Because that's how you catch a lot of this stuff. And, you know, sometimes with these breaches, you may not know for years, you know, if you've been affected by it, if somebody has used that information to try to take some of your money or take other bit of your information. But by keeping tabs on a monthly basis or however regularly you receive your statements, you know, that's one way that you can control what's going on.
And of course, if you are aware, notify us, right? Notify your bank, notify your credit card companies, notify especially your financial advisor, so that we can put some extra safeguards in place and in conversation with you about what you want to happen, so that we can put some safeguards in place on your account to get an understanding of, okay, here's a potential risk that we need to be aware of.
And Kyle, too, with that, you know, when you call in, if there's a couple extra security questions that are asked, you know, maybe what's your kid's birthday, what's the last four of your social, you know, we're hyper aware of that attempts at fraud. And so sometimes if you're talking to someone new, you're going to get a couple extra questions. So don't be surprised if those come your way. And like you said, there's some strategic ways that we can put in our system, you know, code words or specific questions that we can have that we can ask you if you'd prefer, so that when you call, you make sure that, you know, we know who we're talking to and you know who you're talking to as well.
Yeah, we have a series of videos that we did with Jason Skuglik on our website that explains a little bit more about, you know, being safe while you're online, you know, being careful with your passwords and conducting yourself to make it harder for others to get your information.
And of course, as I said, it feels like there isn't a week that goes by when we don't get one of these notifications that something somewhere has been breached and your personal information has been compromised again. We don't always make it a point to bring it up. I think this one was particularly important, given that it's the IRS, given what the IRS knows about all of us, that we get it out there. It's a small risk for a small number of people, but a risk nonetheless.
And I don't know if anybody's going to make any political hay from this, but I used to cover the IRS when I was a reporter, it might be another reason to not underfund the IRS. I mean, it's the Department of Revenue. It's the, you know, it's the agency that generates revenue for our country, and they've been underfunded for years, and maybe this is part of a result of that.
You know, Joel, it's that time of the month when our newsletter goes out. Just a quick plug, if our listeners are not already subscribed, you know, a great way to get some regular updates on the very kinds of things we were talking about, right? Some of those videos from Jason Skuglik, some of those pieces that you've written on kind of protecting your own identity. You know, this month, some pretty important updates, I think, as well.
Yeah, we a few weeks ago, we did a podcast that was devoted toward planning for year-end investment concerns and doing it now, getting a head start on it. So we've got a little article with a link to the podcast, but also some more resources with more information to let people know about that. We've got an article from you that I thought was well done, looking at the statement that Jerome Powell made at Jackson Hole a week ago and what that did to the market, but sort of spinning it so that investors know how to make that relevant to them and what they can control with their own situation.
You know, I think that's always the key, right, is how do we apply what we've learned to what we're doing with our investments? And there's going to be plenty of information that comes down over the next couple of weeks, as there always is, updates on earnings expectations, updates on what the Fed's going to do, updates on inflation data. You know, I think happy to be here talking about it, always happy to share with our listeners on kind of what our take is. You know, the overall message tends to be it's more of the same because, you know, I think that's the expectation. The reverse of that is that, you know, we're going to stay on top of it. We're going to let you know what needs to be done. So thanks for listening. We enjoy talking to you, and we'll do this again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.